is a presentation of KSL Sports. Hello, Cougar Nation.
Who's open for three? Angle left takes it and makes it. Fusene Traore. And listen to the Cougar Nation.
Every Monday night, we break down the last week of BYU basketball and look ahead to the Cougars' prospects for the postseason. Cougar Nation. Here's BYU insider Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte on Utah's legacy home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio.
Good evening, Cougar Nation. Welcome to Big 12 Basketball. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte with you live here on this Monday championship football evening. But we're talking Cougar hoops, and there's so much to get to as the Cougars are looking to bounce back after that difficult Big 12 debut. We'll unpack what happened against Cincinnati and look ahead to tomorrow night's top 25 clash against the Baylor Bears. And let's just dive right into it with our takeaways.
Cougar Nation, takeaways. Mitch and Matt analyze BYU's last week of play and what it means for the next week.
Let's get to it, Mitch. Our takeaways. Takeaway number one. I think it was a disappointing intro to start Big 12 play against a fellow newcomer, not even one of the legacy members of the Big 12, Cincinnati, a long road trip. They come in and kind of take the air out of the sail for BYU basketball. How disappointed were you in that performance, Mitch?
Very disappointed. BYU falls 71-60 on Saturday night, and I thought it was a performance. It wasn't anywhere close to the team that we saw in the non-conference. You know, the team that we saw in non-conference play, I was buying stock into them despite the weaker schedule because of the dominance that they displayed. And being on your home court in the Marriott Center, I thought – BYU's going to show up against Cincinnati. They are going to play well, but it was not there. And I thought that BYU got – I don't think it was a case of BYU's personnel can't stack up with Cincinnati. I just thought they lacked some belief in that second half. Once things started to go away from them, Cincinnati pulled away, and BYU's belief and confidence was rattled. And I thought that was what was so disappointing to me. What about for you?
Yeah, I could not agree more, and it just felt like they got away from kind of how they play. I thought there was some mind-boggling, it might be too strong of a term, Mitch, but there were some really puzzling coaching decisions in that second half, and we'll get to that more in a little bit. But I didn't love at the end where there was the offensive-defensive swapping between Khalifa and Atiki. Like, on paper, that makes sense. Atiki's a better defender. Khalifa runs the offense better. But considering in that second half there was no flow, there was very little continuity, you had a hard time getting anything going, I just felt like the switching of rotations back and forth, back and forth, back and forth made it even more difficult than it needed to be. And I think that leads into another takeaway, Mitch. What was coach thinking leaving Trevenel out of the game for over 6 minutes? He exits with about 10 minutes to go, and he was clearly BYU's best player. He was their most reliable scorer. Up to that point, he had made 9 of 13 threes. He had a new career high in scoring. He takes him out, and he sits for 6 minutes. It just did not make a lot of sense, Mitch.
Trevenel had a career high, 27 points, all of which come from three. He knocked down 9 threes, second all-time in a single game in BYU history for most threes made. This was Mark Pope on his thought process behind the decision to sit Trevenel as long as he did.
You know, Trev is playing such great basketball on both ends of the floor. It was really terrific. And we're trying to keep fresh bodies on there the best we can and trying to maintain some matchup integrity with some of the matchups that we liked well. But he was terrific tonight. I thought he was fantastic.
Pope basically kind of ducked around the question. Let's call that what it is, that answer to that. I mean, look, it was, you know, in the non-conference, there were times where fans are saying Jackson Robinson should be starting over Trevenel, and now people are saying Trevin should be staying. But the thing is, Trevin was having a historic night. Ride that hot hand. He was the only guy that was knocking anything down, any sort of semblance of offense. Let that guy cook. It's like that meme of Woody holding back the toy and saying, hold up, let him cook. Let it, Trevenel cook, Mark Pope.
Yeah, and I didn't like at the end of that quote, too, when he said, you know, we were trying to keep matchup integrity, and it's like, by that point, that's out the window. Like, the game has become what it's become. you've got to ride with the guys that are playing well. And Trevenel was by far the best player. He even said in the quote, Trevenel's playing great on both sides of the floor. Then play the man, for heaven's sakes. It just, it did not, look, I can understand maybe he's tired, give him a breather, but 6 minutes, it just didn't make sense. When he had left the game, they were trailing by one. When he comes back in, they're down eight, and then he misses two free throws. He doesn't make another shot the rest of the way. He was clearly cooled off. It just didn't make a lot of sense, and that was frustrating too, is just knowing, hey, we have a guy who's having a career night. Not just a great night, Mitch, a career night, and you take him out when it means the most. The final 10 minutes of the game, that one is going to sting for a little bit.
Especially, too, when you look at the stats. I mean, Trevin was 9 of 14 from 3. The rest of the BYU squad was 4 of 32. You put those two numbers together, it was 13 of 46. But Trevin was the only guy knocking down threes. And BYU got a lot of praise coming into that game last week. They were the nation's darling. And everyone was talking about them being the best shooting team in college basketball. That's why there was this belief that this team can do something special. I think this team can still be pretty good, and we want to get the voice of Cougar Nation out there. 801-575-8255. Is it time to panic on this BYU basketball team? Load up the phone lines. We'll get to some of your calls. But takeaway number three, Matt, you know, we talk about shooting. You're not going to win a lot of ball games when you're shooting total 33% from the field.
It's frightening to think about what the shooting percentage is, too, when you take out Trevenel from that perspective. Yeah. Because, he was 9 of 16 from the field. You already alluded to his three-point shooting, 9 of 14. You take those numbers out, nobody is even close to shooting 50% from the field. And you got guys with double-digit attempts. Noah Waterman, 3 of 12. Dallin Hall, 3 of 13. Spencer Johnson, 3 of 9. Even Jackson Robinson, 2 of 7. You would have liked to have seen more attempts, but he was not efficient either. And you're just, look, We can complain about the Trevenel not playing at the end of the game. We can complain about a lot of things. We can point to a lot of things. At the end of the day, Mitch, you're not going to beat anybody in the Big 12 if you shoot 33%. I take a little comfort in that, knowing they shot so poorly, and maybe if they had been more like themselves, they could have won that game. But, man, 33% shooting is not good. They got outshot by 10% by Cincinnati.
It was pretty surreal, too, to see BYU jack up 46 three-pointers. This was Mark Pope after the game on if he was okay with that volume of three-point shooting.
Well, I like the 46. I would take 46. The disappointing side is, you know, we missed 30 of them, give or take, right? We missed 33 of them. And we were really unsuccessful on the offensive glass, and that's a real problem for us.
They weren't that unsuccessful in the offensive glass, Mitch. They had more offensive rebounds than Cincinnati. I think not all three-point shots are created equal. A lot of Trevenel's threes, the offense was flowing. It finds him. He puts it up. He makes it. There were a lot of other threes where they were just settling for deep threes, downhill in particular, a lot of threes that were several feet off the three-point line. Those you'd rather not take unless the shot clock is expiring.
No question. And I think that, you know, this team, too, has got to find a little bit of its identity in the Big 12. It's kind of similar to football where, you know, you start off high and you feel good about yourself. But I feel like the men's basketball start is far different than what football was. I think there's too many people saying, oh, no, here we go. Men's basketball is going to do the same nosedive that football did. Football was a bad product even in non-conference play.
Yep.
It looked bad against Sam Houston. It didn't shock any of us that they were losing in the Big 12. It was just shocking that they never got it right offensively. BYU basketball is a good team. It's just, I think it was just a little bit worrisome to lose to a fellow newcomer on your home floor. That's what kind of makes you pause. And again, the question of the day today is it time to panic on BYU basketball? We want to hear from Cougar Nation throughout the show. Let's get in to the phone lines. Linda from Salt Lake City. Linda, is it time to panic on this BYU team?
No, I love the players, especially Trevenel and Noah Waterman are my two of my very favorite players. And I just felt so bad for Noah Saturday night. I mean, he just couldn't seem to get the shots in, and I just felt so bad. And And I agree with you guys on Mark Pope. And when he, I didn't want him to take Trevin out of the game either. I don't think that was right at all, because where he was scoring a bunch of points and stuff, that really made me mad, actually. I thought,
I agree.
Why are you doing this?
I think a lot of Cougar Nation, Linda, was sharing those similar sentiments. Thanks for the call. 801-575-8255. Yeah, Nolan Waterman, 7 points, 3 of 12, 1 of 9 from 3. Noah's having this trend of these big games against Utah, against Cincinnati. He's not delivering at the level that we saw against, you know, NC State and Arizona State, where he's the Vegas Showdown MVP. They need Noah Waterman to show up, Matt.
Yeah, however, I do want to give him some credit. 8 rebounds. He led the team in rebounding. Yeah. The team got out-rebounded by Cincinnati, and I think that played a large role in the loss as well. But I thought Noah was still impactful in ways. It's just 1 of 9. That is hard. That's hard to stomach, and I think the only nitpick I have with Noah is he has shown throughout his career he could be insanely hot and hit 5, 6, or 7 threes, and he's making a difference. And there's other games, like the Utah loss and the Cincinnati loss, Mitch, where he's not shooting the ball well. My only nitpick would be, when you don't have it from deep, get in the low paint. Backdoor cuts, get to the free throw line. No free throws. You got to find ways to score besides sitting on the three-point line. So I love that he was involved in the glass. But if you don't have it from deep, get to the rim. I felt like that was missing from nearly everybody on the team. Dallin Hall wasn't attacking as much as he's capable of doing. Noah Waterman was floating on the three-point line. If you're not shooting it well, find a way to get to the free throw line. Find a way to get to the rim to try and get your game going.
BYU's 12-2 overall, 0-1 in Big 12 play. We'll take our first timeout. We'll get to more of your phone calls, 801-575-8255. It's Cougar Nation. The voice of Cougar Nation can be heard over this next hour talking BYU hoops, and we're going to share our thoughts on if it's time to panic on BYU basketball. Taking a break, more after this.
BYU fans, join me, Tim Hughes, and Amanda Dixon for stories that affect our jobs, taxes, and families. Utah's Morning News, each morning between 5 and 9 on KSL News Radio.
Cougar Nation, love having you in on this Monday, reacting to the Cincinnati loss and looking ahead to the Baylor Bears matchup tomorrow. The conference schedule, it's a little different now, Mitch. We got some Tuesday action, we got some Saturday day games coming up, so that's been kind of fun seeing these just a different cadence to conference schedule with BYU and Baylor taking place tomorrow. Pre-game starts at 6 p.m. We're taking your calls all throughout the hour. 801-575-8255. Is it time to hit the panic button, Cougar Nation? You can chime in on any other topics related to this BYU basketball team. Mitch, let's throw that question your direction. Is it time to hit that panic button?
Not yet, Matt, because this BYU team is in the toughest conference in America, and this league produced a team last year that started 0-5 in Big 12 play and reached the NCAA tournament. That's the West Virginia Mountaineers. So what we've seen is that this league, you can, you know, start with a lot of losses and still achieve the heights that BYU is chasing. You know, the goal of this season is, with how you got started the year with non-conference play, you got to get to the NCAA tournament. Anything less than the NCAA tournament now would be a letdown. Now, I think in the preseason, having this conversation about having a 10-point lead at the half against a team like Cincinnati would make you feel pretty good and like, okay, strides are being made. But the manner in which BYU played in non-conference, that was a little bit worrisome, and I don't think Cougar fans want to experience the, you know, feeling of a huge letdown. But again, this league and how the advanced metrics love the Big 12 and they love BYU still being at number 4 in the net ranking after the loss, they still have everything in front of them, and I think that's exciting. But yes, I do admit the style of play was concerning, because that front court with an injured Fusini Traore was worrisome. Having no strong presence down low, is concerning, because then you're resorting to almost 53s and there's no real threat in the post. So BYU needs Foose to get healthy in a hurry. But no, I'm not panicking at all yet on BYU. And honestly, I think they can be a team that bounces back and can still achieve everything that they want to this season.
I'm with you. I'm not ready to panic yet. If they had shot 50% from the field, sure. Maybe it would be time to panic. But the fact that they shot so poorly and still had a chance late in that game. You know, if Trevenel makes a pair of free throws, it's a six-point game with a couple minutes to go. It can go any direction. Instead, they just can't buy a bucket, even at the free throw line, and it gets away from them. I am concerned, though. You touched on the low post scoring. You know, Foose only played 3 minutes in the second half, which I thought was a little interesting, considering they were just getting blasted in the paint. Maybe you try and mix him in a little bit. I know he's working off of injury, but still, he only played 8 minutes, for heaven's sakes. You get outscored in the paint 30-12. You get out-rebounded 45-36. Those things are concerning to me, because I feel like there could be a lot of games in the Big 12, Mitch, where you're out-rebounded and you don't score a lot in the paint. And if that happens, it's going to be hard to win games. Look, I'm doing some quick math here. They made seven more. They were plus 21 from the three-point line, and they lost by double digits. Think about that. That's not a good stat, to be that far ahead from the 3-point line and to still lose. It wasn't like the Utah game, where the Utah game came down to the last play and they turned it over. There was no opportunities in the last 2 minutes of the game to do anything because the lead was so wide. So they have got to address the rebounding and the points in the paint. Do they need to kill people in the paint and on the glass? No, because their rebounding margin coming into this game, they were over 13, plus 13 in rebounding margin. They don't need to double-digit out-rebound teams, but they cannot get blasted like they did on the defensive glass and in the paint, because it's just hard to overcome that, man.
Let's get out to the phone line, 801-575-8255. Rob, are you panicking on this BYU basketball team?
So I'm panicking on the leadership with this team. Somebody needs to step up. So my opinion is that's got to be Dallin Hall. I think he's the guy, and I'm ready for him to step up. So, Dallin, if you're listening, I'm calling you out. It's time to step up and to start being the leader of this team. And I thought the decision-making process from him just needs to improve. You know, poor shots. And, yeah, in the big games, the tight games, he just needs to step up and make better decisions. And I think he could lead this team to be better than they are.
Thanks for the call, Rob. Dallin Hall finished with 10 points, 3 of 13 from the field, 2 of 12 from 3. He had 2 turnovers, 3 assists. There was that shot, though, where it was near the Marriott Center logo. BYU was getting a little bit of momentum. They were down by 4. They cut the deficit from 8 to 4. And he jacks up a 35-40 footer, kind of the shot that, you know, Mark Pope was indirectly referencing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it just felt like it deflated the momentum that BYU was gaining as it hit the iron and Cincinnati was off and running. I think Rob makes a good point, Matt, that Dallin Hall has got to be great for BYU. I watched the practices, and he's a vocal leader. I think that's a promising sign. Like, he instructs guys where they need to be in practice. He's everything that looks like a leader, but he's just got to elevate his play on the court, because as of late, he struggled a little bit.
2 of 12 from 3 in the loss, and I like Rob referencing the decision-making, and this goes for multiple players. If you do not have it from 3, it's okay. We can't just be taking 40-foot shots, because he took, what, off memory, 4 of his 12 three-pointers were well beyond the three-point line.
Yeah.
Well beyond the three-point line. Get to the rim. Get others involved. Run the offense. Like, that's what you have to do as the point guard. And, look, I would love it if Dallin Hall eventually became a Steph Curry type, to where you just – or a Jimmer. let's keep within the world of BYU. If he can become a Jimmer to where you don't – hey, any three's okay – great. Is he there now, though? I don't think so. I don't think he's there yet as an offensive player. So I'm totally with Rob. He's got to make better decisions, because that's what the point guard has to do. And there were too many settling for possessions when they could have had a better shot.
801-575-8255. Feel free to call in, share your thoughts if you're panicking on this BYU basketball team, or share your thoughts on the game tomorrow against Baylor for this BYU team. You know, another thing that kind of gave me a little bit of panic coming out of Saturday, Matt, was just the sheer physicality and the athleticism of Cincinnati. Now, I'm not saying anything groundbreaking to Cougar Nation out there that BYU maybe didn't have the athletes compared to another opponent. Like, BYU's been living in that space for decades, whether it's football, basketball, so many different sports. But to face a team like Cincinnati, who, like you, is also a newcomer, but unlike you, they had so many new pieces that were coming together on the fly. BYU's got the continuity. I thought that continuity would kind of win the day over simply athletes and athleticism and physicality, but it was staggering how big of a difference there was on Saturday night against Cincy.
Yeah, especially in the second half, too, because Azeez Bandango, maybe a familiar name here in the state, he played at Utah Valley last year, transferred to Cincinnati, and he had been battling an injury. He did not get the start. And then in the second half, Coach Wes Miller for Cincinnati said, hey, looks like you're moving well. Let's roll with you. And he played the majority of the second half, and he was a difference maker, double-double. That's the type of in-game adjustments that I think that you'd like to see Coach Pope evolve to, where if a Trevenel is that hot, play him 18 to 20 minutes in the second half. It's okay. He's going to make it. Or in the case of Foose, maybe Foose is down the road getting healthier. Maybe play him more in a situation like that if he has it going like Cincinnati did with Azeez Bandango, because you're totally right. That physicality, that athleticism, that shut down BYU in the second half.
Taking our second break, news, traffic, and weather coming up on the other side. We'll get an update, too, coming up around the corner on the national championship game between Washington and Michigan. But then we'll also get into what's trending up and trending down with this BYU basketball team as they're in Waco getting ready to take on the number 14 Baylor Bears tomorrow night. This is Cougar Nation right here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the Cougars.
Just like Cougar fans come together for BYU basketball, the community gathers around KSL each morning for important news. Listen tomorrow between 5 and 9 to KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to Cougar Nation here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the Cougars. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte. We host Cougar Sports Saturday every week from noon to 3. And we hold it down here on Monday nights during the football and basketball season, 6 to 7. Taking your phone calls to get your voice on your favorite BYU teams. 801-575-8255. Our question tonight, are you panicking on this BYU basketball team after they fall to the Cincinnati Bearcats in game number one of Big 12 play? We'll give you our trending up and trending down thoughts on this BYU basketball team coming up, but I wanted to get a quick check-in of the College Football National Championship. Michigan, Matt, is rolling through Washington 17-3 early in the second quarter. Seems like Michigan's going to roll to their first title since 1997.
Hey, there's still hope for a game. Washington finally got a stop forcing the field goal, so maybe they can go down and make this interesting. Can't have back-to-back years, Mitch, of blowout national championship games. So I am rooting for Washington to make it interesting, but I have to be honest with everyone here. I've got some diehard Ohio State family members, and they get on my nerves from time to time, so I am rooting for Michigan. I have to put that out there. I'm sorry, family. Go Blue!
I'm with you, too, because I'm actually pulling for Michigan as well, because I think the last thing we wanted to hear is the Pac-12 went out on top.
Nah, right. We're not
hearing that. We're not having any of that. Not on Cougar Nation. Let's get now to what's trending up and trending down for Cougar Hoops.
Cougar Nation, trending. What's trending up and what's trending down this season?
That was the chef's kiss work of production by our producer,
yes,
Nate Slack. Just magnificent stuff there. All right, Mitch, to start with you, what's trending up?
Atiki Aliatiki, Triple A. You know what? I think Atiki is doing a nice job for BYU. And I thought last game against Cincinnati, you kind of got the full Atiki experience in some ways. I mean, he only finished with 2 points, but there were possessions where he's making an impact, especially in that first half when BYU built up a 10-point lead. And I just feel like you're getting to a point with Atiki's game that you can count on him for, you know, 10, 15 minutes a night that are of value. And I think you're thinking that that role might diminish a little bit because Foose has returned, but Foose clearly was not 100%. And Atiki Aliatiki's role is going to be significant, I feel like, you know, for the foreseeable future, for this next week or so, because until Foose is anywhere close to his usual self, Atiki's that backup five, and his minutes are valuable. And I like the effort that he's been bringing. At the end of non-conference play, he had back-to-back double-figure point totals for the first time in his BYU career. I know he's been a project for a long time, but in year three, midway through, I like where things are trending for Atiki, and I feel like he's playing his best basketball of his career at the moment.
I like that choice, Mitch. I didn't like how he was being subbed in and out at the end of that game for offense, defense. I get the thought because he's a better defender than Ali Khalifa, but Atiki has had multiple double-digit scoring games this year. I feel like he's earned a little more leeway on the offensive side of the ball to set screens, to rim run. They sure could have used a few more points in the paint in the loss against Cincinnati. For me, it's Trevin Nell, but not because he had a career night. Dude is shooting lights out over the past four games. He's over 50% the last four games, and he's made at least 3 3-pointers in four consecutive games. So this dude is on a heater, which adds more fuel to the fire as to why he wasn't playing at the end of the second half. Dude is just shooting it lights out. Play this man at least 32 minutes while he's playing like this, because you know how it is with shooters. You're hot for a streak, and then you could go cold. Let's maximize this Trevin Nell hot streak.
Trevin is a great shooter. And honestly, his form is as pure as it gets among BYU basketball shooters of all time. I mean, when he is in rhythm, it is a thing of beauty to watch his stroke, the form, the release. It's textbook. It's perfect. And, you know, it was fun in the preseason, Matt. You and I talked with Trevin, and we were getting into the minutiae of the nuances of different ball types, because he's the shot doctor, and he knows all when it comes to shooting the ball. But he also gets deep into just the feel of ball textures. Like, he is all about ball. And I think we underestimated, at least I did. I don't want to speak for you, but I underestimated his impact this year's team. When he came back from that shoulder surgery, I thought, okay, maybe he's going to be a nice X factor off the bench, but he's critical for this team's success. If they're going to be an NCAA tournament team, they've got to have Trevin Nell consistently knocking down threes and playing a big role for this group.
I severely underestimated his impact. And look, he's not the only reason this team has turned things around from the three-point line, but he is a significant piece. Trending down for me is points in the paint. We just talked about it, 12 points in the paint. I just felt like there was no emphasis. They only took 18 two-point attempts. They only had 8 field goals from two, but 8 of 18 is still better than the field goal percentage they had shot for the game. Just there has to be an emphasis on attacking the rim, which they've done such a good job of all year. That's why it was so puzzling in this game, is because, yeah, they've shot the three ball well and they've taken a lot of threes, but they've always put pressure on the rim. And it felt like in this game there was very little of that. So that's got to be reversed if they're going to win some games in the Big 12, which they will. I'm not worried they're going to win games, but, man, this is not the winning formula. That many threes and no rim pressure. There's got to be a balance between making the defense honor shots at the rim versus taking long shots.
801-575-8255. Call in to share your thoughts, maybe what's trending up or trending down for you, or as our question states, are you ready to panic? Is it time to panic on this BYU basketball team after they start 0-1 in their first Big 12 game? My trending down, Matt, is three-point shooting. Now, they're going to continue to let it fly. They've got the ultimate green light in college basketball. So the volume is not going to dip. They're going to still hit that minimum of 30 attempts from three. I feel confident in that. But I'm concerned in these big games, and every game in the Big 12 is, in essence, is big, that they're not shooting the three well. Against Cincinnati, it was 28% from three. Against Utah on the road, it was 23% from three. You know, they're in Waco right now, and they're going to take on a Baylor team in a new, brand spanking new, $212 million Foster Pavilion. First ever Big 12 game in that setting. like, is BYU going to rip the nets and let it fly and have success shooting the ball in that environment? This team has shown this year that they will not shoot it well in that setting. Now, if it's against Bellarmine or it's against Southeast Louisiana, yeah, it's a little bit loose feeling, like no worries. Or it's a lightly attended Thanksgiving night game against ASU. Sure, they're going to shoot it well because really no one's watching. I just think when there's a lot at stake in a game, it feels like this team's not shooting it well, and that's where I'm going to the trending down piece. But I still believe in these guys as shooters. Like I watch them in practice, and it's just amazing how consistent these guys can knock down the three. You just got to see it carry over into these games against these high-end programs in the Big 12.
Mitch, we got a text, so you can call us 801-575-8255. Love taking your calls. Keep lighting up the phone line. If you don't want to call but you got a question or a comment, you can text us 57500. Here's a question for you. Mitch, why very limited minutes for Dawson Baker?
His foot is still an issue. And for Dawson, this is going to be a point where you wonder, does he have to consider a medical redshirt year? You know, coming out of Christmas, it was after the Bellarmine game, Mark Pope in the post game basically asked, you know, everyone in the media is saying, please give your Christmas prayers for Dawson Baker's foot because it's a real issue. And, you know, you and I, Matt, we heard the preseason buzz in training camp that Dawson Baker was one of the best players in the program. Not just maybe potential starting five guy, like maybe the best guy in practice, the best player in the team. And you saw moments of it where that ball handling ability, his smooth playmaking in those limited spots that he was in, it's like, wow, that guy is so good. But his foot is bothering him, and it's a real issue. And you just wonder if you're getting to a point where do you entertain the idea because the NCAA allows – a percentage of minutes played. I don't know all the nuances behind it. I have to look into the specific verbatim, but there could be a possibility maybe for a medical redshirt year. So that's where you kind of look at that possibility maybe for Dawson Baker. And that's not ideal because I know for a fact that guy wants to contribute in this Big 12 run because you can't assume that this team and this success that you had in non-conference this year is always going to be the case every year. It's just you don't start 12-1 every single year. That's why it's only the second best start in BYU history since 1988. So it's a tough deal because that guy, when he's fully healthy, he was going to be a difference maker for BYU. And it's just that getting only 3 minutes against Cincinnati to me showed that BYU's got to be in a spot where they got to seriously look at his health and make sure that that's at top of mind and get that foot ready for the future.
Which is a real shame because his skill set was sorely needed in the game against Cincinnati. Just someone that could break down a defense and get someone an open shot. There's just very few of those players on this team. Dallin Hall is one of them, but they really could have used that because Trey Stewart's minutes, he was just ineffective against Cincinnati. 4 minutes, 4 turnovers, didn't take a shot. They just, man, if they had him fully healthy to split that role with Dallin Hall at point guard, gosh, it would be a difference maker. So, but I think you're dead on, Mitch. If you're only playing 3 minutes with that skill set, I think he's not healthy enough. And why burn a year if he's not going to be able to give you impactful minutes?
It's a tough deal because he was an all Big West performer at UC Irvine. And, you know, fans listening right now, they're maybe getting up to speed on BYU basketball. You're thinking, who is this Dawson Baker? He's kind of an unknown, but really he was a special player in training camp. And then he suffers the foot injury and he's just been behind the eight ball ever since. But they got to get him healthy. And if it takes a medical redshirt year, they got to explore that avenue for BYU going forward. We got to take our final timeout. On the other side, we'll get a preview of tomorrow's top 25 clash, BYU and Baylor. And we'll also take your phone calls, 801-575-8255. Your thoughts, is it time to panic? Is this BYU team going to win tomorrow? Share your thoughts, 801-575-8255, right here on Cougar Nation on KSL News Radio.
Make sure you have the KSL News Radio app to stream BYU games wherever you go. You can also get breaking news alerts and podcast your favorite KSL show, all on one app for KSL News Radio.
Welcome back in, Cougar Nation. Final segment of the show, and we're taking your calls. Last chance to chime in on the loss and look ahead to Baylor. Maybe who you'd like to see step up if they want to upset the Baylor Bears. 801-575-8255. Mitch, you'll be there. What are some of the interesting storylines between BYU and Baylor tomorrow night?
I think we've got to start with Caleb Lohner, right? I mean, former BYU forward who was a big name when BYU flipped him from Utah. Remember, he was a Ute signee. He backs out of his letter of intent to come to BYU. And it was an up-and-down 2 years at BYU for Lohner. He was a starter on that NCAA tournament team that faced UCLA as a sixth seed. They lost that game. But then the second year, I think everyone thought Lohner was going to take that massive leap. And offensively, he did not. And he hit some historic lows by his standards, personal lows, shooting the three. And, you know, to the point where Cougar fans were at times booing him in games. It was kind of getting a little salty at times. And, you know, he goes to the portal, lands at Baylor. He's a reserve off the bench for the Bears. And this was Lohner on, you know, his desire and his motivation to face BYU and ultimately take down the Cougs.
Yeah, I think you transfer from a school, you want to beat them. but they got a great program, a great team. So, I mean, either way, selfishly for me, it would be a great win. But also for the team, they're a great basketball program. So any game in the Big 12 we can win is a good game.
He went, you think Lohner plays spoiler tomorrow night for BYU?
I mean, probably. I just feel like I feel like that's not an easy bounce back to a quick turnaround after a poor shooting loss against Cincinnati to go down and play a top 15 team, number 14, Baylor, and all the talent they have. Now, Lohner, to this point in his Baylor career, Mitch, he has not had very many big games. Yeah. He's very, very much a reserve, but it would not feel good for him to just blow up and have a big game off the bench against BYU, no doubt.
Lohner's averaging 3.4 points per game this season for the Bears, 2.9 boards, averaging about 12 minutes per night. That was kind of the similar stat line last season, so they know his role. He's going to get about 12 to 15 minutes per night. I got to imagine this game's going to have a little bit more of an uptick. But Baylor, they are outstanding offensively. Number one nationally in three-point percentage. They shoot the three at 43.2%. Head coach Scott Drew, he's a former national champion winning coach. He's picking Lohner's brain to get the scouting report on BYU.
Well, we try to get all the information we can out of Caleb, so make sure that we're on point with what we're seeing, what we're doing, and he's got a lot of respect and a lot of friends there. And
that's a nice little advantage for Baylor. You mentioned their shooting. BYU defensively has been very good at defending the three this season, Mitch. Scott Drew doesn't expect either team to struggle shooting the ball tomorrow night.
Yeah, both of us, two of the best offenses in the country. We didn't shoot it well the last game. They didn't shoot it last game. So laws of averages, both of us won't have too bad shooting games. But I think, again, credit the Big 12 defenses for that. And things get a little harder in the Big 12.
What do you think BYU has to do to be within striking distance tomorrow? What has to change from the loss against Cincinnati?
They can't turn the ball over. You know, against Cincinnati, they were a little bit loose with the ball, 18 turnovers. And I know that the level of competition leveled up going into the Big 12, but I don't believe that's BYU's DNA at all. I think BYU is a sound team when it comes to taking care of possessions. And you give the ball up 18 times, you're not going to win. And so they've got to keep that thing low, that turnover number, first off. And I think you got to shoot a great percentage from three. Baylor's going to. I expect that fully. I think Baylor's going to – that building is going to be electric tomorrow night at Foster Pavilion. And it's kind of an intimate setting, you know, only 7,000 seats. They designed that, Baylor did, to kind of have almost like that field house feeling where you're going to get capacity crowds every single night. The aesthetics, the acoustics are going to create a loud environment where it's on top of you. It seems like, looking at the videos and the pictures, it's a steep setting. It's all on top of you. So BYU better be shooting the ball well against Baylor, because I fully expect the Bears' offense will not slow down. And Baylor, I think, Matt, is the deepest team in the Big 12, and I think they got the best NBA talent. Jacoby Walter, a freshman, he's outstanding, number four. Keep an eye on him. And then Yiz Missy, a seven-footer big who had a double-double in their road win at Oklahoma State. They got tested against a young Oklahoma State team in Stillwater, but they got their ninth consecutive victory against Oklahoma State in Stillwater. They went to overtime, so it was just another example of a tough Big 12 test, and anyone can take you down. But, you know, BYU has got to be able to shoot the three well, because my expectations in the post against a guy like Missy are not very high. So take care of the ball and shoot the three well. What about for you?
I think they have to find a way to get others going. I know that sounds maybe a little cliche, but when BYU's had some really nice blowout wins, you look at the box score, there's, what, six guys with double-figure scoring, seven guys, and it's balanced between, you know, maybe Robinson with 18 all the way down to Khalifa or Atiki with 10. And I think that's the other thing, too. Jackson Robinson has got to be himself in some of these games. If you're going to beat a Baylor on the road, if you're going to beat a Kansas on the road, if you're going to even beat a Houston or a Texas at home later in the month in January, 5 points, 2 of 7 from the field. That did not look like the guy that was getting late first-round NBA draft potential buzz the other night against Cincinnati. I love that this team is balanced and there's not any dominant stars, but you got to have somebody that you feel like you can rely on in late game situations. In both of the losses, Mitch, answer this question. Who do you feel like is the guy to get you a bucket when you need it the most?
It's a great question. I feel like my instant reaction would be Dallin Hall. That's my pick I would go with, but the last five games would say otherwise. But history, since Hall arrived on campus, he hits big shots. And even this offseason in a summer practice that we watched, he's burying a half-court shot to win a scrimmage. I mean, this guy has a clutch factor, and he's got that ability to take over a game if needed. So I feel like that's my pick. But he has got to get out of the rut that he's in, because he just hasn't been playing well at the moment.
I'd like it to be Jackson Robinson, because of his length and his offensive skill set. He's got a wicked fadeaway jumper.
Yeah.
But, man, I just keep looking at that line. 5 points, 2 of 7 from the field, 1 of 5 from the three. You know what his plus-minus was against Cincinnati, Mitch, off the top of your head?
I think it was like -9?
-19.
Oh, okay.
By far the worst plus-minus in the loss against Cincinnati. You can't have someone with NBA potential be -19 and beat some of these good teams in the Big 12. So balance out the scoring, but in particular, Jackson Robinson, get back to who you've been all season long.
Tip-off tomorrow night, 7 o'clock here on KSL News Radio. The TV broadcast is only online, ESPN Plus. So if you don't have ESPN Plus, fire up the 102.7 FM, 1160 AM, the KSL News Radio app. So many different ways to listen to BYU versus Baylor tomorrow. A top 25 clash out in Waco. I'll have you covered inside the Foster Pavilion with coverage on KSLSports.com. It's going to be a lot of fun seeing BYU and Baylor. But I must say, though, Matt, I don't feel like it's a must win for BYU.
The must win is later in the week, Mitch.
That's what I was going to say, because the other game this week is BYU at UCF on Saturday in Orlando. That is a must win. You have to win that one. If we come back on Monday night on this show and we're talking about an 0-3 Big 12 BYU team, that's when we might have to revisit the question again and say, now is it time to panic?
Yeah, no doubt about that, because, look, if they lose tomorrow and then beat UCF and they're back home for a chance to be 2-2, 2-2 after four games, not bad. Then you got Texas Tech and Houston. Maybe, you know, if you are able to steal a game late in the month, you could be 4-3 at the end of January. That would be actually a win, I think, for BYU in their first month of Big 12 basketball.
Subscribe to the podcast. Follow Cougar Nation on all podcasting platforms. We'll be back on Saturday, noon to 3, here on Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio.